90s was one of the most influential decades in modern history. From music to movies, the decade had style that many people still emulate to this day. During the 80s, we got action-packed movies like the first Terminator and the Die Hard movies, but we also got many movies that highlighted the rebels, the nerds, and the other groups that were stereotypes portrayed in many films. Mr. John Hughes, also known for his work in the Home Alone movies, wrote the cult classic known as The Breakfast Club as a way to break the social standards that surrounded high school kids, because jocks can't talk to nerds, right? That's what we grew up knowing, and this movie put that to the test. But that all changed when they're all stuck in detention on a Saturday and honestly don't really have much to do. So we're going to be talking about this cult classic right now on another exciting episode of A Cast to the Past, where you can check out a brand new episode each and every Sunday talking about our favorite movies, video games from the early 2000s. But this is the first time we're covering a mid-80s movie. So we're actually covering something that there's no way that we watched it when we grew up. So now that we did watch it, or maybe at some point during the 90s or the 2000s, what do we think about that? So we're definitely going to be talking about that with yours truly, Juan Velas from Puerto Rico. As always, I'm joined by Keith Poshuk from London, Ontario. Keith,
hello.
I got perhaps a personal question for you, buddy.
Okay.
Take me back to the days of the high school when you were studying as a kid. Did you belong to any specific group? And be real.
Do I have to go back there?
I'm afraid. I don't want to know the answer. But Keith, for educational purpose, I got to know.
You know, honestly, I was one of those guys that didn't really fit in with a group all that much. I had friends, but it was like I had a couple of friends in every group. Like some days I would hang out with the stoners, some days I would hang out with the jocks, some days I would hang out with the nerds. I kind of had friends in every group and then would just kind of gravitate everywhere. So I never really hit a mold that way. High school was a weird time for me. I don't want to talk about high school.
High school is a terrible thing. Over. I don't know about you, but I try to forget high school in my case, but Mr. McNulty from Boston, Massachusetts, taking it over to you, buddy. I'm going to feel old with your answer because taking back time, when did you graduate or how long ago did you graduate from high school?
High school was 2007. So what is that, like 11 years now? Almost.
And how does this make
almost
you
11
feel?
Years, I think. I just recently, there was my 10-year high school anniversary thing. I did not go to it. I did go to the 5-year one, but I was like,
how
you
did
know
that
what?
Go? Because I never got to any of those.
See, the 5-year, you're not that far removed. So you just hang out with the people you still kind of know and keep in touch with. And there was a few people who I was friendly with in high school that I hadn't talked to in a while. So I talked to them. But other than that, it felt just like high school pretty much. And I was like, I don't really need that anymore. So I didn't go to the 10-year one.
You see, I made sure that I burned every single bridge on the way out. So
of course you did.
I talked to no one from high school, and that's okay.
See, my class, I think a lot of them actually ended up in jail or committing some crime. Some of them are no longer with us. Some of them are doing fine. So, hey, it's not all bad, but let's just say that I try to forget about
that. I wonder if anybody from my
part.
High school is dead.
See, that those are the things that are best left unanswered, because you never know. What if you had like a best friend that's just gone there? But I think like... it's so great that we're talking about this movie, which was actually voted on by our listeners. So thanks to everybody watching and listening. And don't forget to subscribe on YouTube or drop a review if you listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. But this movie, because it came out in 1985, and it talks about social standards, right? Because I think that for decades upon decades, even today, when you talk about movies, they still have their stereotypes, whether it be about race, gender, you know, economic status. But to my knowledge, this was the first movie that I watched, and I must have watched it in like the mid-90s, that let me know, hey, this is something people have been talking about for decades in movies, and there was a standard where, you know, if you're the jock, you can't talk to the nerds, and if the nerd is seen talking to the jock, then the jock isn't cool. Did you guys enjoy movies that had that type of conversation?
I did to a degree. A lot of those movies, although granted, most of those I think I saw came out after The Breakfast Club, but it is just sort of a standard that these high school movies have like 35-year-olds playing all the kids, and they will have all the different groups and stereotypes. But the thing is, high school isn't necessarily like that. You do have some of those extreme groups. You do have the jocks, you do have the stoners and things like that. But I think a lot of people just fall somewhere in the middle and don't really identify with any of those groups. And that's kind of how I felt. Like, I was probably more on the nerdy side, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't say I was the total nerd or whatever. I probably didn't do well enough in a high school to classify as such. But I like that this movie tried to make all of those kind of groups relate to each other in a way, because it's not as segmented as a lot of movies like to portray it to be.
Yeah, for me, it's all about how tastefully a movie actually does it. Like, if they play up to the extremes of the stereotype, then I find myself turned off by it. Like, oh, here's the nerd, and he has glasses and an alfalfa, and some girl is making fun of him, and he's getting bullied. Like, there's a tasteful way to do it, and there's a lot of movies that don't do it, but I find this is one of the cases that they actually do it right.
And it's interesting because as I kept watching this movie, I had to remember 1985, right? Because even there's two different ways that I see it, because high school for me in Puerto Rico is dramatically different. So when I see these, you know, huge libraries and the different culture shocks, like here, you know, in Puerto Rico, you got to wear a uniform, where I know in the U.S., and I didn't know about this until many years later, you know, you guys generally speak in many schools, you can kind of wear whatever you want. You can choose your classes. So That wasn't the case in Puerto Rico. That's still largely not the case in Puerto Rico. If you're in the 9th grade, 10th grade, you get those specific classes unless you're on a very specific school. So watching this, it's just fascinating to see, you know, if you're the sports junkie, right, and you love that, how different your lifestyle can be as opposed to the nerdy guy that loves, you know, statistics, that loves math and things like that. What do you think made this movie so special, considering the decade that we're talking about, the 80s? Because when you think all the way back to the song by Simple Minds, you know, "Don't You Forget About Me," those are all things specific to the 80s that people still talk about. Is there anything else about the movie that makes you go, this is the 80s, and this would not be the same if it came out in the 90s or in the 2000s?
It would not be the same for maybe different reasons than you might think. I don't think the movie would be the same with all the kind of like sexual harassment going on between Bender and Claire. That definitely wouldn't fly, and obviously the soundtrack would be different, but I think the main story being told is timeless.
Yeah, that's kind of where I fall as well, that the extremes of the movie would definitely be toned down, but the story of it would be exactly the same. Like, you probably wouldn't have the fact that somebody pulls out a bag of dope be as big of a deal now as you did back then, or somebody doing cartwheels and flips and breaking glass just because they smoked a joint.
The cringe in that part was...
I can't believe the glass broke. That's what I was like, what? This movie was so grounded. Yeah. It was so grounded until
that
happened.
How did the principal not hear that? How did he not hear that?
There's a lot of things you could have said. How did he not hear that?
So when's the first time, I should say, did you guys remember watching The Breakfast Club?
This was actually my first time that I can remember sitting down and watching the whole thing, because I had caught like bits and pieces of it, because I think during the 90s, at least, TBS was probably required by law to air it at least once a month. So I watched bits and pieces of it just from like having it on in the background through the 90s, and like I remembered the library room, but I didn't remember any details of the movie. So this was my first like, okay, let's actually sit down and watch The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, I had not seen it all the way through until this watching of the movie. My sister was a big fan of all the John Hughes 80s movies, because I think there's, what, 16 Candles and Pretty in Pink kind of go along with this as his, like, coming-of-age trilogy. So I'd always seen pieces of it, but never put kind of the whole movie together to to fully understand it. So I did remember, obviously, the library room and a couple of scenes, but yeah, that was just saw a few couple scenes now and again throughout growing up. So it was nice to actually get the full picture.
In my case, I think the first time I actually watched it must have been around the early 2000s, because I don't know why, but I went into a binge of watching all of these old movies. Like, you know, we have a list about some of the movies that came out in 1985. One of them is Day of the Dead. So at some point, I think in the same year, I watched Day of the Dead. I watched this movie and I watched a couple others, because you always hear about some movies, right? Like Breakfast Club, Pulp Fiction. You can name a bunch. That's just like, when you think about movies, these are like the 20 movies that you got to watch before you die, right? Almost like the bucket list. And I just wanted to watch it, but I remembered none of it. I remember the characters, the fact that it's so stereotypical about this is your bad guy. This is the pretty girl. This is the crazy girl. This is, you know, the awkward dude. This is the athletic person. But I forgot all about the interaction. And once again, thinking about 1985, Mr. McNulty, what are some of the other movies that did come out that year?
Ton of classic movies in 1985, including Back to the Future 1, The Goonies, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I love iconic. That. So good.
I didn't know that was the 80s. I thought that was the 90s,
yeah.
But good,
yeah,
good to know.
Here.
Day of the Dead, as Juan mentioned, and Teen Wolf. Oh, man.
Ooh.
Just
see, here's the thing.
Real
Michael
teen
J.
Flick
Fox,
right,
man.
There.
1985 was a good year for Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know if this is controversial or not, but I don't remember watching Teen Wolf.
Oh, no.
I don't know
that
if I have.
We might have to. That might be a good episode to do sometime. I've seen it a couple times, but not in a while.
I thought of a Michael J. Fox joke, but I'm going to not say it.
Thank
I'll
you.
Just let
Please
people
don't.
Out there.
We love Michael J.
Think
Fox.
About it.
Exactly. Right? Michael J. Fox is amazing, man. But seriously, right. Holy crap. Back to the Future and Teen Wolf in the yeah. same year. And the
That's,
Goonies.
Yeah.
So just Goonies, as a man. Whole, so many iconic 80s movies, they came out that same year. So that's really good. And actually, I have a quote here from a review that came out in 2005, because once again, it's difficult to get perspective, right? You can watch and see like the Rotten Tomato meters. And even this review was in 2005, but I think it's the most relatable review to what I thought about the movie. And I want to use this as a jumping off point. So this comes from Rafael Guzman. Rafael Guzman. It's in Spanish. I can say it in Spanish. I speak Spanish, damn it.
Yeah, Rafael use your Guzman. Accent, boy.
Exactly. It's like Guzman from Newsday wrote Rafael. In 2005. Mr. Rafael said, "Rarely have on-screen teens felt this authentic. They bluster, bicker, and trade horrible insults once the film's R rating," which I forgot about that, but I heard a couple of F words, and I was like, is this TV-14? Is this PG-13? Then suddenly, they expose their most guarded feelings. Because for context, Mr. McNulty, what is the gist and the setup of this movie?
So essentially, five different yeah. students all get detention for different reasons. And their detention is that they have to come in for 8 hours on a Saturday.
Which, holy crap.
Yeah,
that's
is
a bit
ridiculous.
Much.
Did you guys yeah. ever know somebody that actually had that happen to them?
No.
No, I don't think we ever did Saturday detention.
It was
detention.
Like stay half an hour after school or something.
Yeah, so obviously they made an extreme concept here. So 8 hours on a Saturday, they're all in this library, and there's I think is it the principal is that is
yeah,
he the principal
yeah.
of the school
yeah.
yeah, so he's kind of watching over them, which also sucks. Like, that dude, like, who would want to have to come in every single Saturday for 8 hours?
Dude, he hates his life. I mean, he challenged yeah. an underage kid to a fight. You know, he's getting bribed by the janitor. He was playing with the foam cups and pencils. He hates his life.
Yeah,
very much so.
So that's the gist of the movie. That's where everything happens. And it's just perfect situations, right? So you start the movie with everybody just sort of going in, sitting down. Nobody's talking to each other. I love the little details about, you know, the bad guy. You see him just walking around, immediately stealing stuff, just knocking things down because I'm bad. I don't care about anything like that. Did you love the setup for the movie, watching it now, knowing that this has been played to death by modern movie standards, but this had to be one of the first movies to really do this?
So I'm going to drop an honesty bomb here. And like I mentioned, this is my first time like actually sitting down, watching the movie, like trying to analyze it. So maybe that's part of the reason why it is. But I hated watching this. I did not like it at all. For almost every reason that you mentioned in that 2005 review, where he says it as a positive way, that all came off extremely negative to me.
So what like stood out though as that made you really dislike it in particular?
It was mostly the character development in the movie that it felt very much like every time they take one step forward, they're taking three steps back as far as like, oh, you're supposed to feel sympathy for this character, but then he just goes on this crappy tirade 4 minutes later or does something really dumb. Like, it's just something that I could not get into at all. And then with the ending of the movie trying to be this relatable monologue, I was just thinking to myself, like, no, they're all a bunch of pieces of crap. I don't want to feel good about them. Like, there is nothing about this movie that I actually enjoyed.
Yeah. Hey, no, I mean, it's great to see everyone's kind of different reactions. I mean, I would say I enjoyed the movie overall, but it's not a movie I'm going to be like, hey, let's all, you know, come over to my place. Let's watch The Breakfast Club. It's one of those movies I'd only want to see once in a long while. It's not something like Toy Story, which we, you know, just recently reviewed. Go check it out. That I could watch you told me like right now, let's watch Toy Story. I'd be game because that's a movie I can just easily watch and enjoy. But this movie, I mean, there's a lot of it gets heavy at certain times. It's all dialogue. Dialogue carries this entire movie. So obviously the writing had to be really good. And I thought it was quite good and very realistic to how I think these teenagers would act in this situation. I thought it was very realistic to that, minus the glass shattering.
Yeah, I was about to say, think back to that entire scene. You think that's how that would go?
No.
Especially like take sure any character, yeah. Any character.
To someone
from that
who
scene.
Just like smoked weed in an office, would they? It's like it was more like he was on cocaine when he's doing those like leaping over everything and like ripping his
I've
shirt off.
I've seen a lot of people
stuff.
That have gotten high, and I don't know, the way he acted just didn't exactly coincide with weed in my case, based on what I've seen. But generally speaking, I think it's just really difficult to talk about this movie because we didn't live in the 80s. Because even though we were born 1989 and 90, when were you guys in high school? It must have been, like, I graduated 2003, I want to say, from high school.
High school? I said 2007, and you're, like, my age.
Oh, no, 2000, so. Yeah, 2007, yeah. 2007, yeah, 2007.
So I would have been about the same 2008.
So, yeah, we were the mid to late 2000s.
So just think about, from a generational standpoint, how different high school was. So maybe this
I don't
was
think
the
it
way.
Was that different, though.
I agree with Ryan, where as far as the stereotypes that they're playing to, I don't really think it changes all that much in those 20, 25 years between us and them. And while they did a great job, like, showing those off, it's almost to a fault because there is... You're investing an hour and a half into a bunch of characters that you just simply cannot get behind, or that I could not get behind.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the thing with the characters, is that really nobody's perfect. There's not really...
It's not even perfect, though. Everybody's just a piece of crap.
Well, okay, to play devil's advocate, this is a weird example, but it ties into this 21 Jump Street. I was breaking my head thinking about that movie. Remember that movie, you have a jock and the nerd, right? And the idea was that the nerd was not cool and the jock was the cool guy, but they go back to high school and all of a sudden the nerd is the cooler one and the jock is trying to act so badass that that's kind of it. And in my case, I'm actually going to say that this is not that different from my high school experience, like in terms of the different groups. So I'm actually going to disagree with you guys because as somebody that was constantly bullied for many different reasons, I was talking about Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z in school, so... Maybe not the most popular kid. Maybe that would be different now. I can totally pick out and remember these were the athletic guys and they would bully me in such a way. These were the ones that were against the law. Mm-hmm. And like one of them actually ended up going to jail. And this was the pretty girl. This was the weird group, which I was kind of part of, really. So I think more so than whether this was accurate or not, it's a matter of context, right? Maybe this doesn't apply to you, but it can be a learning experience, because I guarantee you when John Hughes sat down, you know, he apparently wrote this in just 2 days. That was one of the fun facts we were going to bring up. But if you live through something like this, it's probably not that hard, because I guarantee you he probably sat down at an actual library or something and just been like, okay, what happened when I was in school, right? What were some of the situations happening? And I think that would be something fascinating to see if there's an interview of him talking about that. But the good thing is that if this was a BuzzFeed article, which BuzzFeed is laying everybody off, so I guess it's a bad time to really talk about that. But this is almost like one of those, which Breakfast Club member are you? I think this movie is supposed to, more so than be a social statement, it's like a social identifier. When you watch this movie, who do you resonate with? Because generally speaking, I'm curious here, of the five characters, who do you relate to? Even if it's not one-to-one, not exactly. Keith, are you the rebel?
Well, no, because I don't know that I honestly can't answer that question because I hated every single one of them.
Okay, then let's
rephrase.
That
makes
this.
Keith the rebel.
I guess so.
So how about
I'm a
this?
Rebel
about
against
this?
The movie.
Say one of these five has to be your friend, has to, like obligated. Which one would it be?
I would probably choose the jock, I guess.
It's Emilio Estevez, man. He's the coach of the Mighty Ducks.
Am I saying that I get to be friends with Emilio Estevez? Because if that case,
That's
but
cheating. That's
just
cheating,
the jock character.
What about you, Ryan?
All right, yeah. I think pretty easily the nerd Brian is who I related to the most. Someone who would have been just like, hey, let's just sit here. Let's just wait this out, not want to cause any trouble. So I definitely read it. I was on board with him until he started talking about bringing a gun to school. Then I was like, all right.
Yeah. What a dark turn that was.
You know what? Nowadays, that kid, you don't get Saturday detention for that. You're in jail, my friend. Yeah.
No,
see,
normally
even if it is a flare gun. Seriously.
These days they succeed and it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot about this movie that just would not work or would not happen. Actually, let's clarify. Would just simply be cut from movies now. Because remember, this is a high school setting. Unfortunately, we've seen the terrible things that have happened in high school. So I don't think that they would do a movie where one of the characters is smoking weed and breaking glass while yelling. The other one brought a gun to school regardless of the kind of gun.
I think they would definitely be smoking weed. For sure they'd be smoking weed. They just wouldn't.
But the way it would happen, because with this, it almost felt like that was the plateau, right? Like, wow, they're smoking weed.
I think now it was only... It was really only Brian who reacted that way, which I think is the one character that it's appropriate for him to react that way.
Yeah, I mean, really, I understand why those characters acted the way they did, because growing up with that stuff, you see a lot of the stereotypes of it. Like, you're going to have the jocks that go like, and then, like, I guess the nerdy guys that, like, start going into jokes and doing weird, like, hey, yeah, we're cool, man, stuff. And then, like, the little preppy girl going like, tee-hee. Like,
oh my god, what is this, like, the cow goes,
but
the nerd goes, huh?
But that's part of my, thank you for derailing me, but it all plays into the characters that they're trying to build. And they did an excellent job with it, because that is, for the most part, how those cliches would
act.
But
see, the thing is, I don't think this movie is about, I think we're missing the point. I don't think the movie's about the stereotypes. Because at the end of the day, I think the message is that all of these, it doesn't matter which part of social circle you were in, at the end, they all related to each other and realized they're a lot more like each other than they thought. But also, realistically, when they're saying, hey, you know, after this, we're not going to be friends. Like, you realize this because they know once school starts back up again, they have to conform to their social circles because of, you know, just societal pressures and things like that. But I think the whole point was for, you know, all these people thinking that they're different come together and realize they're very much the same.
And that's a really big deal. And maybe the biggest part about the movie, because initially, and I can completely understand why Keith feels this way, it feels like the first half of the movie is like severely overacted, like it's just overacting all over the place. But with what Ryan just said, it makes sense, because maybe I'm not the jock. Maybe I'm playing a jock because I want to fit in, right? Maybe I'm not the pretty girl. Maybe I physically am the pretty girl. I'm beautiful, right? But
yeah,
let's just say that I'm playing that character because I want to fit in with that group, even if I don't identify, but they're the cool kids, right? So when I go to detention, I'm like, I got to keep playing that character, especially if I'm going to be here 7+ hours, right? But as time goes by, the character wears off, right? I think that happens anywhere, whether you're developing a friendship, whether you're at work, right? People are always like, they're looking at you, Ryan. They're testing you out, right? Like, who really are you? What do you like? I'm thinking about my coworkers, and they don't talk to me now how they did when they first started, right? When they first started, it's like super proper. They're playing
your guard
the character.
Is up.
Exactly. But then as time goes by, it's like, whatever. Like, I'm me now. And I think that right there is the part that I loved about the movie. And to Keith's point, they kind of went back and forth a little too much, where it seems like the rebel, John, he kind of opened up, right? And then Claire kind of opened up, and it seems like everybody was getting along. But they went through this huge roller coaster in what seemed like 20 minutes, where I think it would have been fine if you closed it off a little bit earlier. Like, understand the situation. Nobody's perfect. These are kids, even though they look way older than 17 because their actors are. But hypothetically, they're in high school. But I love that balance of playing a character, but then you see the person. But then how you mentioned, Ryan, then all of a sudden they're saying, it's like, hey, we're friends right now. But when it comes time for it to be Monday, I got to hate you again, because that's the social norm, right? I can't be seen hanging out with a nerd like you, because that has negative implications. So how did you feel about that, Keith? Because I'd say that's the most realistic part of the movie. Did you at least like that?
Yes and no. Like I mentioned earlier, where they did justify that part of it, but when they were taking those two steps forward with it, they didn't really give it time to breathe, in my opinion, before taking it three steps back. Like, a roller coaster is the exact way that I would describe it, where just look at that one scene where everybody's like cross-legged sitting down in that like upper area, where it's all of a sudden, okay, now they're bonding. Claire does something weird with her lipstick. And then all of a sudden, okay, now the rebel is like talking smack to her. And then now they're getting deep again. And then all of a sudden Claire turns against basically everybody. And then all of a sudden they're friends again. Like, it was, even though they were trying to get that message across, and I think that they did, for the most part, it was very, like, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and it gets a bit lost that
way. It's by design. I agree that it was tough. It seemed a little out of nowhere with the relationships that kind of formed at the end. Because you're like,
yeah,
wait.
That's a whole other conversation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I think that was the biggest leap I've ever seen in a movie, almost.
Well, especially one relationship. But I think that it's never, when you're talking about high school kids, it's never just this perfect dialogue that's going to lead somewhere. I think the back and forth, the fighting, and then the, like, oh, they're cool again, now they're fighting again. It's kind of realistic to how kids might act. It's not always just going to be this smooth progression in a building a relationship where everything goes right. But I think they could have done a little bit more to really smooth things out at the end, because then all of a sudden people are making out and you're like, where did this come from? You know,
yeah, that felt
it's like,
really artificial.
It's like, hey, we only got 20 minutes left. Something needs to happen here. All
between,
right, everybody start making out.
Between like Bender and Claire, there was kind of that tension, although it felt more like harassment a lot of times. But I think that you could argue.
Straight up harassment.
Yeah, you could argue that there was some sort of sexual tension between them throughout the movie. But then when you're talking about Andrew the jock and the weird girl, it was like, oh, she's hot now. I'm going to go make out with her. You know, yeah. That's basically what it
that
was.
Made no sense. Like, I understand, like, hey, you know, she looks different now, so she's attractive now. But at no point in the movie that I feel like he was trying to connect with her and all of a sudden to just, like, make out in front of, like, the parents' car, which has to be like, weren't you in detention
today?
Like,
well, who is so, this well, no, that person?
Was that the making out in front of the parents' car, I think that was more, wasn't that more Claire and Bender that did that?
They both, yeah, as far as I could
made
tell,
sense,
it both
though.
Happened.
It did make sense for Claire, though, because she was saying how she wanted to get back at her parents. Yeah. So that's that makes sense, but maybe the other one, not so much. And it's like, okay, I know she's hot now, dude, but are you really going to forgive the Captain Crunch sugar sandwich stuff? Like, I feel like, I don't know.
I don't know about you, man, but that was my moment where I went like, hey, you're special. Oh, yeah. I like you.
You like that?
And like, how terrible are her parents? Like, here's this random dude just making out with my daughter in front of my car.
Well,
now.
They kind of established they don't care about her.
That's still a special level. But to kind of go back a bit, yes, all that happened, and yes, there was character development. I think the part where it all falls apart for me is that I couldn't get behind any single one of those characters. So it all kind of felt like, oh, okay, I guess this is happening and this is a weird place to be, but I guess we're here now. Doesn't mean I like any of them. Like in that, especially in the second half of that movie, just the roller coaster it goes on. Like, oh, you think you're starting to relate to the nerd. Then he talks about bringing a gun to school just because he got a D or an F or whatever it is. And then I guess the only person that I would say that it was closest to is Emilio Estevez, and talking about like, but even that got dark with the whole like his dad stuff. Like, yeah, everybody has tension with their parents, but that was like to an extreme. And
well, that's actually pretty real. I mean, without going into too much detail about my day-to-day job, I see these situations happen all the time, and I don't want to get too dark about that, but that's what I kind of liked about the movie. Now I kind of get why you mean that you didn't like them, and it's because you had these spurts of moments where you saw the human side of the guys, but it was so minor that it's hard to justify, oh, I like you now, despite the fact that out of 100%, maybe 75 has not been the great part. Like,
yeah, and
John.
They're all flawed, basically. You know, you kind of see the flaws in every character. They don't focus on one character more than the others for you to really get behind. But at the same time, it kind of just puts a bunch of different people out there with different problems that I'm sure in one way or another you can at least relate on some level to one of these characters, but they do kind of lose you in certain places.
But for example, you look at the rebel, John, the bully. I feel like I actually knew a kid in high school that was like that, and where this kid went to jail. Like, he would bully me. A lot of stuff happened. Like, a classroom broke. Let's just say things were actually broken out of fights between him and me. But one day, I was bitten by a bee, and I wasn't sure if I was allergic or not. Guess who was the one person that immediately helped me, took me to the nurse in the school? It was him. So he went literally from, like, fighting me to, like, he was the first person to help me, and he would not leave my side. And the whole time, I'm like, dude, you've been calling me fat. You've been calling me this. You've been wishing me death, and now here you are helping me? But it lets you know, like Ryan mentioned, nobody's perfect, right? So, you know, John had that opportunity where everybody was about to be caught because they escaped the library. But then he just goes like, whatever, what does it matter? But then towards the end of the movie, they actually explain why he did do that, because he just went like, hey, if I die tomorrow, nobody would care. I'm irrelevant because I'm seen as the troublemaker. I mean, we haven't even talked about the principal. And I feel that right there is actually one of the key parts as to why these young kids actually go through all these problems, because from the moment they step in there, notice how the principal is not going in with the mindset of, I'm going to help you guys, I'm going to make sure you get better,
I'm going to fight you.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, I don't care, you're going to suffer here, you better not talk, how dare you do something. And that's like that's actually what happens. You know, think about Brian, the fact that He did the gun thing and everything because of the social pressure and the pressure that his parents had when it came to grades. So it's not that they wanted to do these things, but they felt the pressure to do so.
Now, I want to ask this. Did the principal character remind you of anyone?
Not ringing any bells right now.
Really?
Yeah, not really ringing any bells either.
Oh, He reminded me so much of Vince McMahon. I don't know how you guys didn't see that, but like, you just the look and the way he acted, I was like, you know, he totally reminds me of Vince McMahon.
Wow.
God, you know, damn it. I hate sneezing. Don't sneeze here. Yeah.
My favorite part that I can totally get that is the newspaper stand part where he's like suggesting to put the newspaper stand in the middle so that the door doesn't close. But then Andrew says, hey, you know, health hazard. So he's like, oh, get this out of here. He's like, weren't you the one that said you wanted this to happen? Yeah. So I totally see that. What did you think about the janitor? It's a minor role, but this is actually pretty real. I think that the janitors, even in my job, they rotate janitors because of confidentiality, because they can start to see different patterns. So every now and then they actually take turns. So that way, you know, it's different information. What role do you think he played in this and what you think of it?
I thought it was cool the way, because John was trying to like tease the janitor, asking, like saying that Andrew was interested in like the custodial arts, and you know how he was like a smart guy who immediately picked up like, oh, this guy is messing with me. But then, yeah, like you said, he talked about he's like the eyes and ears of this place because he's always around, and you know, in the halls, he kind of knows everything that's going on.
Yeah. I would say that he's the most relatable character in the way that he immediately caught on, like, oh, these are just a bunch of crappy kids. I'm going to mess with them. And then I think that he was, I would call him the anchor of the movie, where he was the most like down to earth person, where everybody was playing such an extreme. He was just a normal guy.
Yeah, that's really true. And I love the fact that you have this entire high school that's empty, but then the principal's trying to get information, then the janitor's like, hey, you know, I saw you do this. I'm totally willing to call you out. And you need that. You need that gut check, right? You need that reality check in a movie at some point.
How big was that school? Sorry to cut you off. Like, how
freaking huge.
Gargantuan is that place where there's like 17 stairwells that they ran through?
Apparently, my friend, that is the same school as Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh interesting. Really?
Yeah, it was filmed in the same school, actually. So
Did John Hughes do Ferris Bueller as well?
Yeah.
Oh wow,
that would make sense.
Well, he's probably like, I know a place where we can film.
Did they? Exactly. Did they keep the same school name of it? Like, is it the same name school?
That part.
Have to look that up.
Yeah, remember, like, I didn't watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, so my information is strictly off the internet. So yes, people, I need to watch a lot of movies. I understand that very much. Something else that we haven't touched up on is the movie takes place not just in one setting, which is the school. It basically takes place in the library, because I'm just going to say it's like probably like 10 minutes outside of the library at most. How well do you think they utilize that one environment throughout the movie?
I think they did a pretty good job, considering it was a pretty big library and you had kind of the upstairs area too. But for the most part, they're really just in that kind of main area where the tables are. And when I was watching, I was thinking, man, this has to be a relatively low budget movie, because they're just spending most of it's heavily dialogue based, and they're spending like 80% of the time in this one library. So I imagine, aside from just kind of paying the actors, that it probably didn't cost too much to make this movie.
And it really did benefit the movie in the way where there's not a lot of movement, so you're putting less of a focus on action and more of a focus on characters. Whether you like them or not, the little, very, very small amount of actual like scene movement that happens in the movie plays up the characters and builds them to really make that the standing out point of the movie.
No, definitely, man. And something else about that is talking about some fun facts is that almost all the movies in the 80s had at some point this weird montage. We talked about the glass breaking, we talked about the music, but even before we hit the play button, I mentioned to my wife, like, I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure at some point this has to have one of those random 80s montages that has music playing in the background and people are dancing. And this movie had exactly that.
Sure enough.
Especially with the, what do you call that? Like the dance? I could never do that, where they move their feet. Like,
yeah, they're
this.
Like shuffling side to side.
Yeah, shuffling, yeah.
So, yeah, the weird thing about this is right after I watched this movie, one of my roommates was watching the show Community, and it happened to be the episode where they were making fun of the Breakfast Club, and they did that dancing. They did the exact same dancing montage as they did in the movie. And I was just like, what are the odds that it just happened to be that episode right after we watched
it? The stars aligned.
So yeah. What was your favorite thing about it?
Favorite thing? Honestly, some of it was just the ridiculousness, like the dancing montage and the glass breaking and Emilio Estevez like vaulting over the library like bookshelves and stuff. But I think it was just the fact that sort of in the end they kind of realized, hey, we're friends, but we know because of the way high school is, we can't be friends. Just sort of that realization. In that kind of realness to it, and the fact that that's still, even though things would probably play out a little bit different in the 2019 version of this movie, that it's still very relatable.
I would have to say my favorite part would be the hallway scene, I guess, where talking about the different personalities, that's where it really shows like the different decisions that all of these people would make when they were trying to get away and get back to the library beforehand, like arguing amongst each other and then having the nerd like calculate if this is the right idea or not. Like that was a strong strong point as far as personality wise goes. And I will say I enjoyed that part.
For me, I'm actually going to say my favorite thing was the silence, because yeah, from a budget standpoint, the fact that you have one location and you have everybody glued there, it kind of forces you, right, where the entire movie is just in this one place. But I feel like if you had the movie happen in a lot of different classrooms, like say hypothetically it's the same setting, but you have four students in one classroom for whatever reason, you have four in another one just to split them up, they would not be forced to talk to each other, right? But the fact that they're sitting in the same place, at the beginning the principal saying, you can't talk, naturally, what do you want to do eventually, right? There's one part where they start to whistle, even though they kind of had an argument beforehand, but because they're bored, they're not doing anything, they just start whistling within, you know, amongst themselves. And I think that is the most natural part of the movie, that if you put a bunch of people, say they're stuck in an elevator, they're stuck in a room or something, eventually they're going to talk. You're going to be obligated to do that, because if you don't have a phone, I think that is the biggest factor that would be different in the 2019 movie, right? Where how do you have these people just not do anything with so much technology? But I feel like that was maybe one of the things that you can appreciate, that if you have a kid from nowadays watching this, it will probably be like, why don't they just take a selfie during this or something?
Well, yeah, I think if the 2019 version, if everyone had a cell phone, no one would talk to each other, because you could just watch movies on your phone for the whole time and people would be entertained enough to not talk to each other. Easily, you could just be like, the principal confiscates everyone's phone for the detention, and then you could have the same movie play out. That's, you know, just one little wrinkle you have to add.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you do this thing of you're taking away a teenager's phone for 8 hours, that basically becomes a horror movie at that point.
Good point.
All of a sudden, you get The Lord of the Rings, high school edition. You got to find the one phone to rule them all, man. We talked about our most favorite thing. Keith, take it away with perhaps the most video pausing, channel turning, cringe inducing moment of the movie.
Well, seeing as I can't say all of it is my least favorite part of the movie, I'm gonna have to say the ending, where if you take the part where they give Allison, the weird girl,
yeah,
if they gave her a makeover until the end of that movie. By the way, it's kind of funny now that I'm thinking about it. Like, I don't think we did it on purpose, but we didn't really talk about Allison all that much in this discussion. Like, the person that kind of falls into the background, and that's her character in the movie, kind of fell into the background of this discussion. It's interesting. Yeah. But once you start at the point where they get or she gets that makeover and move all the way to the end of that movie, that's where it all fell apart for me, because I was on the edge where I'd say like, okay, if this turns around, I would say something positive about it. But just the way it ends and they jump to so many conclusions, especially with Allison and the jock just like, oh, now we're going to make out because guess what? You're hot. You're still weird probably, and I'll probably never talk to you again, but hey, we're making out because you're
hot
now.
It's like super superficial, right? Because you're saying, yeah,
it's extremely
you're still the same person, but you look different now, so I guess I want to make out with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Keith on that totally.
And even with the other relationship, and while it made sense, that's how they closed the movie, like Claire giving that earring and then him just walking away. Like, what a strange way to end that movie as far as I'm concerned. I wasn't a big fan of it at all.
I agree with Keith. I think the least favorite part is the forced kind of love stories at the end. And like you said, particularly the situation with Allison, because you're telling a good story everywhere else that, hey, let's, you know, see what's in common with each other. You know, we're not so different, even though we're in these different social circles. And then you just throw one other thing with, oh, hey, if you just get this classic makeover scene, then all of a sudden you're attractive and you're going to find someone you like, which kind of is spits in the face of the rest of the message of the movie.
It's true. I was just thinking that. Yeah, it's really the one poor thing message to send.
That's like the one thing that really didn't date well. In comparison, I think the other messages in the movie are timeless, but that's something I think that they would skip out on in like a 2019 version.
I'd say for me, it's very similar to what you guys were talking about, which is that I feel like they tried to tell so much in such a short amount of time that if The Breakfast Club were to be a TV series instead of a television show, we will be having completely different conversations, because you could dedicate...
They can't stay in the library forever, man.
No, yeah. But you could have at least like one episode dedicated to each character before the library, but then they
is
go
it like
in
an,
there.
It's like an is episode it like of Lost. 24 or something like that?
No,
like
you
each
could do
episode
it like
is an hour?
You could do it like Lost, where each character gets like a flashback episode and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. It could
because
work.
The one part of the movie where I felt the script in my face, you know, every movie has at one point just something that lets you know, like, oh, this is where you try to connect the dots and you can figure out another way to do it. So you just sort of do it, is when they start asking or saying, hey, do you know why I'm here? That's like the biggest, like, okay, we're just going to throw it all here.
Yeah, like you're not in frickin' prison. Come on, guys.
Oh, did you?
And if,
yeah. Well, I was going to say, speaking of that, did we ever find out what Claire did? I don't think we do. Because, I mean, that was a cool thing that the movie did, was they, instead of everyone just saying at the beginning, like, hey, this is what we did, they spaced it out throughout the movie, so you're kind of slowly wondering throughout, like, who did what to get to where they are.
Mm-hmm. But I don't everybody else's revelation, but hers.
I don't recall if you ever find out.
Yeah, and now that I think about it, like, really, the degrees of punishment do not equal out here. Like, there's a little bit of difference between bringing a flare gun to school and taping somebody's cheeks together. Like, those punishments should not
flare
equate
gun,
to the same thing.
Cheeks. I love Allison's explanation. I literally had nothing else to do, which is like, well, how did you get here? Did you voluntarily come here and then they just accepted you? But it's like the perfect circumstance of... like Brian shares his story and it feels
she skipped school to go shopping. That's
oh
what
right
it was.
They mentioned it at the beginning.
Do. I totally forgot.
It's like it's so basic, right? But I think that we've talked about the severity of the situations are so different that I know that we're probably overanalyzing part. We always do that at some point, whether it's about a game or a movie, but it's important because the fact that one of the people is a flare gun, the other one, I was bored, I went grocery shopping, you know,
Clothes shopping.
In my case, I would leave to go grocery shopping because I love to do that. But that would, I don't think I would go in detention for that. If anything, they should say I'm a responsible human being. But it felt very forced as a, oh, wow, each one of you is so different. But they could have done it in a very different way. And I'm still going to stand by the fact that The Breakfast Club as a movie, I can completely understand why people love it. It came out in 1985. When you think about the movies in 1985, yeah. When you think about the other movies that came out that year, you know, think about Terminator 1, not Terminator 2, right? With the first Terminator, it laid the groundwork for future ones. And when you look at the second one and the first one is very rough. And I think that mid-80s was the point where they were trying to tell other stories that were not the traditional ones. And I think with this one, they really tried to do that. And there really wasn't much else to work with. You know, you look all the way up, I guarantee you this movie inspired movies like You've Got Mail. That even though we're loosely tied based on people's interaction and social interaction and engagement, this laid the groundwork for, okay, so how do you get all these people that from the outside look completely different, but on the inside, they have a lot of similar interests? And I think that if we didn't get The Breakfast Club, we would not have gotten all these movies. Like I mentioned it, 21 Jump Street, 22, the list could go on and on.
Is it fair to say we would have never gotten American Pie if it wasn't for The Breakfast Club?
Yeah, 500%.
Makes me hate this movie even more. So before we kind of wrap it up, I do have a question for you guys, because there's one part of the movie that I don't know how well it sits with me, and maybe I could get some clarification for you guys, or from you guys. And that's the ending monologue where they kind of tie everything together of the whole message, we are who we are. Did that land for you guys? Because for me, it wasn't really, I don't think it hit the point that they were trying to hit, because it kind of fell into this whole, yeah, I guess you guys are who you are. You're the stereotypes, but you all kind of suck. So that's not a good thing. So I'm curious your guys' interpretation of it.
My answer would be very different if it were not for Allison. If that whole thing with the transformation for Allison, all of a sudden she's super attractive and he wants to make out with her, I feel that completely contradicts that last message, because that message is saying, accept me for who I am, but then the movie is saying, yeah,
accept you, accept you.
Exactly. If you're the weird kid, everybody accept you, not you. So it's a little difficult to really have that soak in.
Yeah, I agree with Juan pretty much. Is that does contradict it, so it doesn't fully land. It doesn't seem like this big gotcha that you would expect it to be. So that could have been better written. I think the message is there in the movie itself. I don't think the little speech at the end added anything to it.
I feel that was just a part of the movie's from the 80s. One thing that has nothing to do with the actual movie, but the format. I mean, look all the way at the beginning, right? You hear the soundtrack, but you see all the credits play, and then you see the logo, and then things happen. And I remember a lot of movies that happened. I also remember a lot of movies from the 80s having quotes at the end, because it was part of it. It was part of the format. Same way you don't see certain camera angles now because they're old school, digital versus film. Just a lot of things sort of got chopped down as time went by. But any general closing thoughts before we get to the fun facts about The Breakfast Club?
Yeah, just that the speech at the end may not have landed, but everybody remembers like the fist up like ending.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, fist up, freeze frame, fade to black, you know.
Perfect.
So that was pretty cool for its time, and like Family Guy and many other people have like parodied that ending.
Yep. So that is just parodied.
It's like that song is also very, that the Don't You Forget About Me is super, like, it's just directly associated with that movie, and that ending are those are the kind of two things you hear about the most when you hear about The Breakfast Club. Is like, you're either talking about that song or you're talking about that ending, which also has that song. So
it's true.
It's just that's the legacy right there.
I mean, look at when we announced this episode, and the first thing that happened was Juan started singing that song. I don't think that you can think of one without the other. And
yep.
I think this is just a movie that it goes for something, but it just doesn't stick the landing.
So for everybody watching and listening, I would love to know, let us know what you think about the movie. When did you first watch it, or when did you first hear about it? Because I feel those are two very different conversations. Don't forget, we are on social media, A Cast of the Past on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Remember, you can leave us the 5-star reviews, and you can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. And feel free to suggest, like, we've talked about this movie from the 80s, but maybe with the exception, I think the answer will be American Pie. Like, if we were to review a 90s movie with a similar format, I kind of feel like it would be American Pie.
Yeah, that's kind of the movie of that time. And, like, Superbad's the movie of our time, I feel like.
I think that's going to be our first trilogy here.
Potentially. I just kind of watched American Pie recently, and I don't know if I want to watch it again, but, you know, for the sake of the podcast, I will do it if it comes to it.
How many American Pies are there at this point?
Dude, I need
to
Google. Seven.
If you want to count, like, the straight to DVD stuff, there's a lot. Oh, boy.
I know people always talk about the trilogy.
Little brother, Stifler's little brother has his own movies. It's like, oh my God, just forget it.
Man, that was such a big deal when they would talk about that. But while Keith finds that information, we have a couple of fun facts that we found from IFC.com. So, Ryan, if you could just quickly gloss over them, because much like we've done it with Toy Story and other games and movies, it's just fascinating to think about. We know this movie in this shape and format, but it may not have always been the case.
Yeah. So first one, we got John Hughes wrote the screenplay in just 2 days. He said keeping the story in mostly one location made it easier to write and film. So, I mean, there you go. If you want to talk about maybe if there's a few problems with things, he did only write it in 2 days.
But it's actually really good. As somebody with a film production background, I think this movie laid the groundwork for the exercise that you would have with a lot of students, which is write a short film that only takes place in one place, right?
How to make the most out of a very little. And I think they did that. You don't feel bored. Like, you're like, oh my God, they're still in the library, because they have enough going on to not make that be a distraction.
And it also helps that they had the world's largest library to work in.
Holy crap, yeah.
Yeah. For the role of John Bender, Judd Nelson stayed in character the entirety of his time on set. The outfit he wore in the film was the same as what he wore to the audition, and Nelson even provided his own switchblade. How nice of him. Apparently, he kept the blade on him for protection on the mean streets of Hollywood. Hey, it was the 80s.
That is true. 80s Hollywood was crazy. Yeah. I do the same.
Yeah. So Ally Sheedy, who's the nerd girl, didn't go fully method for the scene where she adds her own dandruff to her drawing. Instead of real flakes, the crew used Parmesan cheese as a substitute.
Knowing that.
I feel better. I feel better about that.
Would you eat that knowing that it's Parmesan cheese, but the movie portrays it as dandruff?
No.
It's still in somebody's hair. It's disgusting.
That's probably a fetish.
Anyway,
seen at least 3 videos of it.
Jesus. Before Hughes settled on The Breakfast Club, other titles were considered, like Library Revolution and Lunch Brunch. Library Revolution seems like a hard sell for the teen crowd, and Lunch Bunch sounds like some kind of Brady Bunch prequel. But the embarrassment of saying I love Lunch Brunch would have kept a lot of fans silent.
I would have loved to been of talking about the Lunch Bunch right now. Just saying that is fun.
How many
the
people
lunch
would
bunch.
Call it the Lunch Brunch by mistake?
Brunch. Oh. Hey, brunch is better, man.
Thousands.
Yeah, it's a little more acceptable.
Brunch is the best thing ever. Okay, Keith, did you actually figure out the American Pie thing?
Yes, there's 8 of them. The last one was in 2009. Oh my God.
Wow. We need to delve at some point. We keep talking about, like, the awesome movies, you know, the Home Alone 1. You know, eventually we're going to do 2. I like to review eventually, like,
we're going to get, like, to 4 or 5 or whatever the last
we don't
one is.
Have
we're going
to
run out
we don't
of Home
have
Alone.
To.
Oh, I want to. I want to put us through that pain.
You know, we like to touch on significant movies for the better or for worse.
Exactly.
Do we really have to touch on insignificant
significant.
Ones?
Ryan, are you telling me American Pie, The Book of Love, is insignificant?
Yes.
Because you
exactly.
would be correct.
Thank you. Thank you.
But guys, that's been our episode about The Breakfast Club. Thank you once again for voting on this. And don't forget that every now and then, we're going to make sure to pull you guys on the genres or the generations or the decades, whatever the case, we're just not completely sure. instead of us just talking about it here and making decisions, first we go to the Discord. Don't forget we have that over at acastofthepast.com/Discord. If you don't know what that is, figure it's an online chat app. There's a voice chat component. There's an app for your phone. You can use it on your browser. And we actually divide it by episode. So a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Resident Evil 2, and that was meant for the original episode, for the PS1 game. But because the actual Resident Evil 2 remake came out, then we figured, hey, we're just going to keep using that one for talking about that. We have a WrestleMania 14 one that naturally just became the wrestling one. So there's a little bit of something for everybody. And I think that with this episode, we officially do have just like a tiny piece of the 80s, of the 90s, of the 2000s. And the list is going to keep growing because Mr. McNulty right now is going to take a break because Keith, you are going to be the one that presents the show schedule.
Me?
So Ryan, you get to take a backseat for this because you've talked a lot already with the announcements.
Yeah. I'm happy to take that break.
I can talk about happy things now, like
Keith,
on February 17th. When we go back to Resident Evil 2, like Juan mentioned, the remake came out recently. We've been playing it. Have we been loving it? Well, you'll find out February 17th. And then Ryan has a little bit of redemption to hit. And I'm looking forward to sitting down and talking about the remake. Then come February 24th, we're going to show off our best kickflips, maybe do an ollie. And I hear Juan can do a pretty sick 900 because going to talk about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, one of my favorite games for the PS1. I've already been playing it and I am having a blast. Then come March 3rd, well, I'd love to say what we're going to talk about, but we don't really have a name
I can expand on this for you, Keith.
We need your help, please.
Yeah, so what we want to do a couple times a year, maybe once a month. We haven't quite figured out the cadence yet. But what we're going to do is essentially a free-form discussion show where we can talk about any media we've consumed recently. So if we have watched a movie or we've played a game recently that we don't think is going to come up in discussion anytime soon, that's what we're going to talk about on the show. But we want your help to name this show. Is it, it's free-form discussion. Do you want to call it Tea Time or The Random Show or
Happy Cast Friends?
Happy Cast Super Best Friend Awesome Time
4K.
We want your suggestions.
Flare Gun
so
in the Locker.
Yes, whatever you guys got for ideas, we're open to it. Yeah. So,
Locker
that's,
Up.
That's my soapbox.
No, that's a bad name. We won't call it that.
But yeah, we're going to be open for ideas and suggestions. So let us know. And then when we get to that episode on March 3rd, hopefully, because we are terrible with names. You guys have no idea how long it took us to get to a Cast of the Past. There were options, which I don't even remember. Probably for the better. So.
Wish we would have made the Crippler Crosscast at some point.
No. And that, my friends, has been another exciting episode of a cast
to the
Crippler Crosscast.
No.
You bastard.
Start it again. Go on.
Are we?
Start it again.
Okay. Actually, Ryan, you get to go first.
Go first. A cast
to the
past.
No.
Yeah.